Growth isn't a deviation from what we've done before, but a natural progression to honor all those who make this community strong.
Happy spooky season to all my wicked witches out there, all my wicked witches and my busy girls. We are the Busy Girls Book Club, bringing you the updates you really want on all the famous books out there and whether or not they're good and whether or not you should make time to read them. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Today we are tackling a book that got a decent amount of hype last year, and it's picking up popularity again for spooky season, and that is Cemetery Boys by Aidan Thomas. And this is a YA book that takes place in the Latinx community in Los Angeles, and the main character is a trans boy, and he is trying to find his place in his community, which is called their Brujex, like Latinx Brujex, Brujo, Bruja, that's witches in Spanish. So it's like a kind of witchy community, but really they're like, picture like Dia de los Muertos. They kind of guide spirits to death. They heal people using powers from the god of death, Santa Muerte. And so our main character, Yasriel, is trying to find his place in the community who have never had a trans brujo. And along the way, he and his cousin, Maritza, run into a ghost and have to go on this adventure to find Yasriel's place in the community and help the ghost friend.
And solve a murder.
Also that.
Yes,
there
are
many
mystery.
Dead people as it takes place. The kid lives in a cemetery,
and he can see dead people.
They can see all the ghosts and help them home. And then it's leading up to Dia de los Muertos when all of their family comes back to visit in the form of spirits. Anyway,
yes, yeah. It's very into the Latin culture of Halloween time and Dia de los Muertos and all of the lore behind it. So it's very like in that Latin mythology, but set in East LA.
And also like very much the melting pot of Latin culture in America, ranging from Colombia to Haitian, which is not necessarily Latinx, but it's included in the book. And so you get a wide
Latin America.
Range of, you get a wide range of beliefs and traditions melting together in this book. So it's kind of cool.
It is very cool. But per usual, not everyone on the internet thought so. So we have some reviews that may or may not reflect what we thought or be funny. So do you guys have yours?
Yes. So I will go first. And I've picked this review from Goodreads. Now, to be fair, it took me a while to find any review because all the reviews I could find were paragraphs. And I'm not going to bore y'all with paragraphs worth of reviews. I appreciate those people taking the time to review this book, but for this podcast, I'm not going to do it. But I found one that's shorter, but I'm only going to take the first paragraph anyway. But this is what it is. It's from 2020, and it's Hilly on Goodreads who gave it 3 stars. Now's the time to admit I'm too old to fully enjoy half of the YA books out there. I know I could have liked this book a lot more if it wasn't for my age. That's why I still highly recommend it. And that's kind of how I felt.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah,
I do. I am bringing you some higher ratings because all the like 1-star ones I found were not funny. They were like blatantly transphobic. So, first, I'm going to read you a 5-star review. I have 2. I'm pulling a Casey.
Yeah. Wow. And I only have 1 today.
I wanted to read you this 5-star review because it is in Spanish. And I feel like there's so much Spanish in the book that it was appropriate. So, simplemente se ha vuelto de mis libros favoritos. Tanta diversidad y representación en un solo libro. And if I butchered that, I'm sorry. But basically, because I could understand this one enough, it means simply one of my favorite books. It has so much diversity and representation in one book. And so I thought that was lovely. I'm going to read you a 3.5 star now that's in English. It took me most of the beginning to actually get into it, but one of the better trans narratives I've read. You can tell when an author is writing from experience. I really enjoyed how the main character didn't traditionally pass and dealt with dysphoria in a very complicated family dynamic that was still so grounded in love. I don't often see that particular blend and found it very relatable. The core three in particular were a great cast backlit by a very rich narrative background. I'm glad I finally gave this one a chance. High praise for a 3.5, but I feel like I felt similarly just because it was YA. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with that. And now my review is a 3-star from Goodreads, one sentence. I feel like a terrible person, but yeah, paranormal fantasy just isn't for me. With an exclamation point at the end.
Fair.
So someone who feels very badly for just not liking the book.
Yeah.
Okay. But the overall, it's a very highly rated book. The overall Goodreads ratings was 4.3 out of 5, and the Amazon ratings were 4.7 out of 5. Where do you guys sit?
Okay, I related to your review because at first I was like, it's a 4. And then I was like, no, really, for me, it's a 3. I liked the story and how unique it was. And I really loved the characters and the tradition, like the setting. I thought it was too long. There was a lot of points where I felt like they were just walking around LA. And the YA just didn't connect with me. They're like 16. And I was like, this is weird for 16-year-olds. I don't know. And I thought the end was a little bit hurried and dramatic compared to kind of the slow pace of the rest of the book. So while I loved the characters, it just like, it was fine. It was a 3. It was fine. It was good.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I gave it a 4 on Goodreads, but I'm probably closer to like a 3.5 or a 3.75 because I really liked the characters. I loved how unique the story was. Like, I knew of brujos and brujas and the Bruex community. I didn't know that was the full name of it, but I knew of it from just classic television, like True Blood and some of those other like shows that deal with fantasy in like Mexican culture. So I knew of it. But I had never seen it in any fiction book I've read. And I thought that it was a really interesting community to look into. And like, as someone that's obviously not part of the Latin community, I felt like it was a very easy read. And I felt like I understood a little bit more. And I thought it was pretty well written. But at times, because it's YA, it felt a little young for me, where it was just times where I was like, I'm feeling a little cringy because it's like that teenage awkward phase. And I'm like, oh God, like, I don't want to read about that because I freaking hated my teenage years. So it's very hard for me to read these kinds of books. But I really did like the premise, the plot, and the characters. So I felt like I had to give it a 4 because of that. But I'm pretty much a 3.5.
Wow. Well, I agree. I have been ping ponging between a 3 and a 4. And this is another, but we all just finished this book today. I am not exactly sure where in a week I will come down. I think I'm also like either like a 3.75 or a 4. Kind of similar to what you guys said. I really loved the cultural tradition the book was built on. I thought it was really interesting. I really loved the myths and like the way the book was like built and set up. However, I did think there were like quite a few places where the plot was really slow. There were times when I felt like there was a lot of telling and not showing. And while I really loved the main three characters, there were also times when like, is it Yadriel? I forgot.
Yadriel.
There were times when I was just like not really sure what was going on in his head. Like sometimes when he was like really worried about, you know, the love interest and not his mom, or when this ghost appears and he does not really seem to care that like one of his classmates was like obviously murdered. So
his processing of death is very interesting.
Yes. And so But I still really overall liked it. Like the story really did pull me in, even though I had some significant critiques. So yeah, I think to summarize, probably like a 3.75. Also, yeah. this is maybe shame on me, but this is like, I felt as a non-trans person, this was one of the first genuinely good representations of a trans character.
Oh my God.
I had read.
Yes.
Yes.
Like it made me realize I had felt in other books I had read that like, some things were like tokenized and not fully fleshed out. And this book like really showed me how true that was, because it was just such a well-written character and such like a, it was written so relatably and like so well that it was just, I really like did love the book for that.
Yeah. I feel like as a non-trans person, it helped me understand so many complexities that I've never been able to understand about the identity and what comes with it. And mm-hmm. I was like very impressed that it came through a YA book too.
Yeah. Like there was so much depth to this book, but there were moments where it wasn't very deep. Like Casey was saying about like his relationship with death and like trauma almost. Like it felt like there were moments where he wasn't processing death as deeply as you would think you would process death. And maybe that's just because of the community itself, but it was kind of like, we could have gone into more feelings and depth there, but there was so much depth in the story itself, like as a trans character in a very traditional community. And so I really like that.
Yeah, set in a community where the language is gendered.
Which is a big part of the book.
Yeah. All right, so we kind of are starting in this direction. So do you find the story to be more plot or character driven?
So this book is interesting. At certain points, this book did remind me of Aristotle and Dante, because this book does have more plot than Aristotle and Dante. But in the middle of the book, the plot is kind of like not really there. Like they're just kind of wandering around. I think it's still ultimately plot driven, because I think actually like the characters who change are not like the three main characters. I mean, I think Yadriel becomes a lot more like self-confident, but also like his community kind of like learns a lot about how to like make space for him and his identity. And so I think actually the characters who are not the main characters change more. So yeah, I still think it's plot, even though the middle of the book is like semi-plotless.
Yeah, the plot is going through the entire book. Like it's what causes the first part of the book to happen, even though, yes, like you said, the middle of the book feels very character driven because they almost forget about the plot, which mm-hmm. I was very confused by in the middle, where I was like, y'all, like this guy was murdered. Are we just forgetting this?
Yeah.
Like I would think like grisly murder. Oh, let's investigate it. Not let's go
to school. Let's go to school.
Let's go to school.
Yes.
Let's go on a joyride.
I have a math test. Because, excuse me.
Yes, especially. Oh my gosh, I'm forgetting all their names. Who was the other guy?
Julian.
There we go. Oh my gosh. Especially because not only was Julian like obviously violently killed, but so was Yadriel's cousin. And they just like don't seem to process that at all.
They're like, we have to find Miguel, but first I've got to go take a math test. And I'm like, I would think school is a lesser priority here.
Yeah.
Well, and he views it as like, this is a great situation to prove that I'm a brujo, not, oh my God, my cousin's dead.
Yeah, I was like, okay, there should have been a little bit more empathy, I think, from Yadriel in this character. We forgive him for it, but
he's a teenager. He's selfish.
Right. It did read extremely teen.
Yeah, it's extremely teen. That's kind of the depth I was talking about earlier. It's like, that's where I wish there was a little more depth. But mm-hmm. teenagers are extremely selfish beings, and I get why I can lack that a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So the author is a trans author, which I think is the first we have read. Might be the first I have read in general. I just feel like there isn't that many like popular books by trans authors. So I was pretty excited to read this one. Have you read other books by the author?
I have not, but I'd be interested in seeing more of, yeah, I think this is the first trans author I have read, really, that I can think of.
Yes, I read The Argonauts by Maggie something, which is, if you want to read a very literature-y, like mostly nonfiction book, it's really good. Completely not teen at all, but her partner is sort of like gender non-binary trans. But that is like honestly like the only other like piece of like work that fully I think addresses trans identity. So very underread in this particular area, but this was like a great start. I would highly recommend this book.
On the back of the book says that this is the author's first, like, their debut novel. Wow. But it does tease another book in the back that's coming out or has come out called Lost in the Neverwoods. Mm-hmm. So I think this author saw a void of, you know, a trans Latinx queer voice and wanted to fill that void by writing kind of based on their own experience. So I think that's really cool.
We love to see it.
What do you think about the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read? Personally, I had a couple long layovers and was traveling. So between one day of long layovers, a little reading before that, and a little reading after, I finished it pretty quickly.
I didn't love the pacing of the story. As we kind of talked about, it's like very winding and the plot is sort of like forgotten about, which I think is not necessarily like the best. However, it was super easy to read. So even though there were times where I wasn't really sure what the like objective was, it was honestly like really easy to get through still. I think I finished it in 4 days, but I could have easily done it faster. And I never stopped wanting to pick it back up. So
I agree. And I mentioned that's part of the reason that I gave it 3 stars. It's just the pacing wasn't my favorite. And it felt like for a while they were just walking around LA.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I felt like the middle part, I put it down and I was like, ooh, am I going to pick this back up kind of thing, where I was like, I'm curious about the ending. But at the same time, it feels like we're taking a while to get there. But once like I sat down and read it, I read it in like 2 to 3 sittings. I just had to really force myself to get into it a bit more. So it took me about 3 days, I believe, of on and off reading.
I mean, it is like, I was reading it on Kindle, so I could tell how deep into the book. And so Kindle was like, you're 85% through. And there was still like literally not even an iota of resolution on the original plot. And I was like, whoa, what are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. That I read it on Kindle as well. And that's what kind of kept me pacing, because I was like, you have an hour left of reading. And I was like, okay, an hour left. I can get there. And that's when it starts picking up in like the 30 minute towards the end part.
Yes. And then, yeah, she hits the fan.
Would you watch a movie or a TV show about this book?
Definitely would be a better movie than a TV show. And yeah, I think this could be really interesting, honestly.
I think it could make a fun cartoon.
Hmm.
Like with all the colors of Dia de los Muertos, like the adventures of those three characters.
Yes.
Like beyond the book even, I think it could be kind of fun, kind of Scooby-Doo-esque, but also it kind of feels like Coco with a murder mystery.
Yeah. Oh my God. Scooby-Doo, you mentioning that just like rang something in my brain where I literally was thinking, this is literally like me watching Scooby-Doo as a kid. That's what this reminded me of. And they even mentioned Scooby-Doo in this book, which makes it so much funnier. But I thought throughout it, I was like, this is like, reminds me of when I was watching Scooby-Doo as a kid.
That's very much what it feels like friendly ghosts and bad ghosts and figuring it out. And
yeah, kids taking on the adult mystery.
Right.
Yeah. I would watch a movie, mostly because I think Julian would be a really fun character to see translated to screen. He was so lively and dynamic. He was definitely one of my favorite parts of the book, even though he was also really hot-headed. And so I think he would be really fun to watch.
Okay, well, it is that time. What are your busy girl ratings?
I think I'm going to stick to my quality rating and give it like a 4 stars. It's a fairly quick book to read, but yeah, the pacing's a little slow at times. So it's just if you want to get into it a little bit more.
I actually have been thinking about giving it a 5 just because I think it's really worth reading. Like, even though the pacing wasn't my favorite, it was still really easy to read. And it's been really different than a lot of things I've read. And actually comparing it to Dead Romantics, I had a way easier time getting through this book than Dead Romantics. And so I think I would give it like a 4.5, maybe. Not perfect, but like so close.
I'm like sort of torn between a 3 and a 4. Mostly because I think you have to be fairly open-minded to enjoy this book. And I think a lot of people are not there. Familiarity with the Latin culture helps too. I don't know, like it was fine for me personally. Like it was easy to pick up and put down. The middle was a little slow, so I'm definitely not giving it a 5. But I'll go 4. But I think there are people who just, and I saw plenty of reviews that were like, I just don't identify with this. And I think that's fair. I am not a trans person, so it's an interesting point of view to read from, but other people may not view it that way. So
that's sad.
I think we should force them.
Yeah.
I know. It's just, okay, so I'll give it a 4, but with the caveat that not everybody would pick this up in general because some people are not open-minded.
Don't give it to your grandmother. That's what I would say.
Well, it's YA.
Well, think of how many parents wouldn't want their child in the YA age range reading it. Like,
that's crazy to me because like this is no different from like a straight romance book or a straight fantasy book. There's literally no difference.
But I guarantee somewhere it's on a banned books list.
Oh, don't doubt that.
Yeah. Should we make another banned in Florida joke? Like,
Oh, it's like, definitely banned in Florida.
Probably also banned in Texas.
And Alabama probably too. But that's so disappointing because I honestly wish I had read this when I was 14, absolutely. 15. Like this would have been like a revolutionary book for me.
Like I said, it helped me understand so much that I've just never been able to totally grasp. But I live in Missouri.
Okay, well, realisticness done. We are going to enjoy our discussion over the book. And so I think we're ready for our spoiler alert section.
Yep, spoiler alert. So if you haven't read the book, stop here and read it and then come back and listen to our discussion.
All right, first up, as we've mentioned, this book focuses on the Bruhex community in East LA. Who live around this cemetery. They all see ghosts, and the Brujas heal people. The Brujos kind of supervise the ghosts and make sure that when they're ready to go to the other side, that, you know, they help kind of like sever the connection to this earthly world. And they all kind of like do so as part of a blessing from Santa Muerte. What did you think of all of that and the kind of magical and religious backdrop?
I think the setting was my favorite part of the book. Like seeing this kind of unique magical community in the heart of East LA, but not being totally set apart from it. Also, like the hardships of East LA were there, but this community was focused on like, you know, their history and what they do. And it was very sweet to see how close everyone was. And just the Dia de los Muertos feel of it all was really cool, I think.
Yeah, like the community was very insular, but they still lived in East LA, and the author still recognizes like the issues of the Latin community in East LA, and they talk about deportation and ICE, and they talk about kind of the struggles of being a person of color in this melting pot community. But also they're a very insular Bruhex community, because they are these magical beings and they're still considered weird because they live in a cemetery, which, you know, there's always that book where the family that lives in the cemetery, it's the Addams family. It's very much so the, like, the weird non-normal people. But that was the best part of the book, honestly. It's just the love and support of this community, even though they're very traditional, they do come around, and you can tell that they all love each other despite their differences, and they love each other's differences. And I really loved that part of it, the family aspect of it. And that's, like, a huge part of this book.
I totally agree with everything you guys both said. I think this book just wouldn't have its, like, richness and complexity without the, like, cultural family aspect. It just is so, like, fascinating and wonderful and beautiful but complicated. And, you know, like, we talk about found family a lot, but also the key to my heart is, like, complicated but loving family. I think that's part of why I also loved Aristotle and Dante so much, is they have that, like, family who really loves them, but, like, maybe doesn't completely understand them. And it's kind of a struggle, even if it comes from a place of love. And it really did get me. And I loved how that kind of element of family connected to the religion and the Dia de Muertos.
Yeah. And Lady Death was so interesting. Like, I was captivated by her.
Loved the description of her at the end where she actually appears. I was, like, living for it.
Yeah. And all of her ofrendas and all of the, like, temples. Oh, and
the descriptions churches. Of the food. I could not read this book without just being outrageously hungry. It sounded so good.
Oh, yeah. Growing up in Texas, like, I recognized some of these foods and I was like, oh my God, I could totally go to a Mexican market right now and get these amazing things.
Also, you guys know I love some vegan representation. So in addition to everything else, there is a vegan and I love it.
What did you think of Maritza?
Maritza? Yeah, I'm not totally sure. I think it's Maritza. I loved her. I think I said earlier that Julian is my favorite character. I think that's actually not true. I think it's Maritza. She was just so strong and hard-headed. And I loved that she was also kind of, like, critiquing her cultural heritage from, like, a place of love where, you know, they use animal blood in their rituals. And she wanted to do things differently and had, like, found a different niche for herself inside their religion. And I loved her sassiness and her strength.
Yeah, I love that she was, like, making knives with her dad.
I like that she was willing to break her thing just because she was already sitting in a pile of her cousin's blood.
Yeah, she's like, fuck it, fine.
She's like, well, if it's already here.
Yeah, I'm covered in it.
Well, to be fair, she didn't really break her thing. She didn't use animal blood.
No, correct.
Yeah, human blood, much easier.
She was like, meh,
it's already here.
I can do it. Yeah. It was funny.
It was funny.
She was, like, a very comic relief without being, like, disgustingly funny. You know, like, I liked her.
She was very confident in herself, which I think really is a good foil to Yadriel, because he's going through so much change and dysmorphia and, like, I mean, he's a teenager who's transitioning and going through the process of becoming who he's meant to be. But that's hard when you're 15, 16 years old. And she's just so confident and loving to him and, like, so supportive and never misgenders him, never uses his dead name, and is just, like, a steady rock. And I think the book needed that levity and needed that strong support system.
Well, she kind of takes place of his mom, because he has lost his mom, who was the one person who sort of saw him for who he is. And so his cousin is kind of like that close second, kind of steps in to push him to be himself.
Yes. Also, that brings up one of my critiques. I loved the beginning of the novel when Yadriel is thinking a lot about his mom. I found it really emotional. And then he just like forgets about her as soon as Julian shows up.
Thank you.
I was thinking, what? Are you not even excited to see her? He gets to see his mom again after she's died. And it's been obviously a really hard time for him. And then this hot man shows up and he like doesn't even think about the fact that he gets to see his dead mom again. I was like canceled.
Yeah, he like wakes up from, he wakes up in the hospital and he's like, Julian? I'm like, you're running out of time to see your mom. Yeah.
Your poor mom who doesn't understand what's going on right now and you've abandoned her.
Yeah. And I'm like, I love Julian as much as the next girl, but you've known him for like 4 days. Your mom. What about your mom?
I know. My mom is girls, okay?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Wow. Speaking of Julian, what did you think about their little relationship, ghosty flirtationship, and how it kind of played into Yadriel's character development?
Okay. I'm going to say this, and I have no idea, like, it's kind of a spoiler alert for another book, but we have just done Dead Romantics, which is a book between a ghost and a living being that can see ghosts. So we really put these back to back with, I don't think we realized that this was quite so similar, but I was just like, are we going to go through this again where Julian turns out to be alive and he saves him? And it's just like Dead Romantics. Sorry, I'm just spoiling Dead Romantics because I literally thought it throughout because I was like, why is this so freaking similar to Dead Romantics?
The whole time I was like, oh, so this is another coma book, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, he's gotta be dead, right? And then he was like, they kissed on the car. I was like, he's not dead. Damn it.
Yeah, it was more subtle than Dead Romantic. So I was kind of like, he could be dead. Sure. But at the same time, I was like, there's no way they end it with, and then he's gone. Like, that can't
also
be.
Also, never did explain how his spirit was like bopping around, but Miguel's wasn't.
Yeah, no, that didn't make sense either.
That's true.
Like, supposedly Miguel died first, but still, you would have think if he had to bleed out slowly or whatever, that his spirit would have also been bopping around.
I think it's because he had that St. Jude's token talisman and then called the spirit and no one found Miguel's talisman. The thing that's like connected him.
That could be true. I did find the book super predictable. It is not a surprising book. It's very
YA, incredibly predictable.
Yeah, it just follows every plot line that you think is going to happen.
And I also did think they'd run into a maligno spirit once, but I did not expect Tito with the shears. I was like, damn.
Yeah, Tito was like so normal and then he suddenly wasn't.
I know. It just made me sad. I was like, not Tito. He's so wholesome.
The gardener.
I think this started with a question about the romance. I did like the romance. Obviously, I saw it coming, as we all did. But I almost felt like Yadriel and Julian were foils, the same way Maritza is kind of a foil, in that they kind of like Yadriel sort of evened Julian out when he was getting really hot-headed, and then Julian brought Yadriel out of his shell, and I thought that was like really cute.
Yeah, I mean, Julian's like the first one to convince Yadriel to use the men's restroom in school and convinces him that, like, no, you don't need your community, your family's approval. You are a brujo. You don't need them to say you are one. You are just one. And I think those were really poignant moments. And I really liked that Julian brought that out with him. I guess it would be Julian, but Julian.
The whole time in my head, I was like, yeah, I was saying Julian. But then I was like, I don't want to sound ridiculous, but maybe we sound ridiculous right now.
Y'all, we're gringas. Okay, I'm sorry. I also really liked the relationship, but at the same time, I was like, oh my God, the YA cheese. It was so cringy to me as an adult at some points that I was like, make it stop. But
it was corny.
That's what I get for reading a YA book, you know?
Yeah. If I have to read one more ghost kiss, all right. I've had enough ghost kisses, ghost touches. All right. Just
get
to living people.
I was like, stop. Like, that's where I, especially that scene, I was like, make it end. And I don't know. It was so cheesy teen at some points that I was like, I'm out.
Yeah. It's nothing to do with the two of them. It's just
they're like amazing characters.
It's just YA
cheese. Cringe. Yeah.
Another big part of the book that we've kind of mentioned already is the family. And Yadriel has a lot of family members who are in the book, outside of like our like main three characters, specifically Enrique, Diego, Lita, and Tio Catriz. What did you guys think of them?
You could tell that they loved each other. And like, obviously, Enrique, his dad, and his brother Diego are very like these masculine men's men who are very, they're the leaders and the future leaders of this community. So they kind of have to, they play it up a bit. And so you can tell that they love Yadriel, but they don't totally understand him. And like the moments when he was like misgendered by his father and told to like go hang out with the women. And then like Lita, his grandmother, misgendered, like was like, you'll always be my daughter, says it in Spanish, but you're my granddaughter. I was like, oh, this is heartbreaking because, you know, this is coming from such a place of love. But at the same time, it's denying the existence of Yadriel. And you know that it was so painful for him. So it was a really complicated relationship, which kind of I appreciated.
I think it's realistic. I think, you know, generations who haven't grown up the way we have are not trained to be quite as accepting. And it's not as easy to use real names instead of dead names or the correct pronouns. Like, I think it was really real depiction of how this family still really wanted to love Yadriel, but just like didn't have the background to do so correctly, and it was hard for them. And I think that's probably an experience a lot of trans kids have, especially when they can't receive like hormone therapy and things to fully like live out their identity in the body they want. Like, I think it was a really hard but beautiful thing to read about.
So that line, Catherine, that you mentioned where his grandma is like, you'll always be like my little girl, or always be my granddaughter. That was one of like the most poignant parts in the book for me. It's something that I've thought about like at work. Like, it's just always kind of in my head because it was such a tender, but also like moment of misunderstanding. Like, she's trying to be so loving and she's like trying to communicate this love to Yadriel, but it's in a way that like denies what he's trying to tell her. And so, and like Caitlin, you're saying like that's just so real, and I imagine it's like a very relatable moment for members of the trans community, but also like lots of people of lots of different communities who are having to like negotiate their identity with the way that their family has perceived them. And so I thought that was really powerful. I also loved the depiction of gender dysphoria and the ways that like Yadriel and like being misgendered made him feel. I think that was really well written and was like very eye-opening.
Yeah, the description of him putting binders on his chest was super, it was almost uncomfortable to read at moments, and I think that's the point.
And then you get that
it was making him uncomfortable.
Right. You get that contrast, though, with his mom taking him to buy his first binder. And like, so you get the sweet and the sour.
So we've talked about Maritza a little bit and her. We haven't talked about her family. I loved her dogs. Just side note.
The boys.
Donatello, Michelangelo, the boys.
I was mad they didn't come back in the end, but whatever.
I know, the scary looking pit bulls. But what about Julian's friends? So it's kind of like this ragtag group of outsiders and misfits. What did you think about like Julian's friends and also like his brother Rio and like his backstory?
Okay, this is where, like Casey already said once this episode, like found family will always get me. Like they were so cute, but also like while you got to see their personalities and how they all fit together and why Julian was so easy to accept Jadriel because he already had friends who were trans, you also got like their family didn't accept them. They lived on the streets, that sort of stuff. Like it was such a balance of like realisticness, but also the found family that it made it all the more like sweet. And I also like Maritza's soccer team that just kind of let Jadriel like hang around too. Like that was kind of funny.
Yes. I of course second that. I'm a sucker for found family. I also did love like the concept that these like queer kids found each other and like clung to each other. I think that's also very realistic of like, if you're facing a lot of hostility or you're confused, you don't feel accepted, like finding those people is so important and it really tugs on the heartstrings. They were also all really distinct, which I loved. They felt really real and really solid, even though they weren't like in the book that much.
I also, though, side note, at the end, they mentioned Luca was like, what the heck, when he saw Julian, but I wanted Luca to be like, wait, y'all told me he was dead. Like,
yeah,
I needed that reaction.
Yeah, Luca looks like he had seen a ghost. And it's like, well, kind of Luca did see a ghost.
Like, I needed like a verbal reaction to be like, dude, what the hell? You told me he was dead. Like, I don't know. I loved Luca, though. Luca was a sweet, sad character.
Yeah. I thought that was especially the part where Maritza's friends allege that Julian and his friends are like part of a gang or something like that, because they're different. They're not showing up to class. They're outsiders. And then we find out that Luca was taken in by a gang and they had to get him out essentially because he was more vulnerable. And then Julian talks about like how some people are susceptible to gangs and the gangs know. And so they enlist them and get them in for life. And I thought that was a really poignant part of the book where it's like, no, my friends are not part of a gang, but yeah, we did have to get one of our members out because he was more vulnerable.
It's also the entire reason that you end up liking Rio, basically. Because he gets Luca out of the situation.
Yes. Cause he's like another character with like a very hard exterior, but then you see all these people who he has helped and taken in and like selflessly provided for while being like 22. And so, yeah, it's like this author does introduce so much that feels authentic. Like, we're talking about like trans youth and queer youth and being in gangs and being vulnerable and being on the streets and struggling to explain your identity to your family members. And this is all one book and it felt like natural. Like that's
it was like seamless.
And then add in ghosts and witches and magic and
then
mythology.
An evil guy murdering people.
So it's a lot. There's a lot to this book.
Yes.
Which, okay. Speaking of the mystery part, did you like the mystery? We kind of talked about it. All starts with Miguel dying and then he finds Julian. He's just like, oh, well, I'll go help this ghost now.
Fuck Miguel. I never known Miguel. Who is Miguel?
Yeah, he's in like the book for like 5% of it, despite being like the inciting incident.
It's like not until they make the connection that other kids have gone missing off the street that you realize it's all connected. Well, I mean, I totally realized at the beginning, but it's when it's revealed to you that it's connected and then you're like, oh, okay. But for a while, it just seems like Yadriel's just kind of like, oh, hot ghost. All right, let's go.
Because Yadriel says like, he's like, oh, I need to focus on Miguel, but I have to help Julian first. And I'm like, that's not, you can put two thoughts in your head at once.
He's like, why? I have to release this ghost to prove I'm a brujo so that I can go help Miguel. And I'm like, I feel like you could do these in a different order.
Yeah.
Or you could do them at the same time.
Yeah. Also, I thought the author was really heavy-handed with the hints about Teo Quatrice being
evil. Oh my
god. Oh my god.
And I was like, can we like be a little softer on this? Like everyone can see this coming.
It gave such like Bruno from Encanto vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Except that Bruno ends up, spoiler alert, being good and Teo Quatrice is not.
No,
it was like kind of the weird uncle no one here talks to or whatever.
This is gonna sound awful, and please don't. Oh my god, I can't believe I'm saying
this.
He reminds me of Doofenshmirtz from Phineas and Ferb, like just the obvious villain with the monologuing of his evil plans. I'm like, really? We had to do Scooby Gang right here.
Oh Doofenshmirtz.
Man, we're gonna tag Dan Povenmire in this episode. Thank you.
Yeah. I did not have Catherine brings up a comparison of villains to Doofenshmirtz on my bingo card, but
it reminded me of a cartoon though. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like it was very Scooby Gang.
He's a cartoony like, villain.
Melodramatic, yeah.
Or it's like the real life Scooby Doo movie when Shaggy ends up being not Shaggy, yeah. Scrappy Doo ends up being the villain.
Yeah.
And like sucking souls out of people.
Yeah.
Honestly, now that I say that, that's literally what the other underground scene looks like in my mind.
Oh, it is. God. It makes me uncomfortable how similar those.
That was a terrible movie, too.
Oh, so bad. So bad.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Did I watch it constantly as a child? I did.
Oh still, indeed. Yes.
When Velma comes down in that rubber outfit.
Yes.
That scene made me so uncomfortable as a child.
Yeah. So Teo Quatrice is Scrappy Doo. Okay.
Is everyone with us? Is this making sense?
Dan Povenmire, can you help us out?
Schmertz Evil Incorporated.
By the way, side note, they're rebooting that cartoon.
They're not.
They are.
Wow.
Dan Povenmire is a huge TikToker.
He's
been talking about, they just finished recording like the first episode of the Phineas and Ferb reboot. Anyway, maybe they can incorporate this into an episode. I don't know.
Anyway, so this is basically foretold since the beginning of like Teo Quatrice, like, look, we're so different. We're on the outside. Like no one understands you like I do. Like it's very grooming weirdness. Like I always felt weird vibes from it.
While grandma's going, hey, the claws are missing.
It's like, yeah, that was the thing. That's what I was about to mention. It's like, yeah, these daggers are missing that are these like ancient daggers that could release a jaguar god and destroy us all. Like I was like, so no one seems to care about that. Like,
yeah, y'all. And it's come up
as like, soon as they were mentioned, I was like, well, obviously someone's doing this.
Yeah.
And they take great care to explain the whole myth behind Balaam. And I was like, okay, this is our eighth time hearing this. Obviously, you know, it's going to come back up.
Yeah. It's like Balaam and Zialba. Zibalba, whatever. It was close. It's ancient Aztec, ancient Mayan. I have trouble with those kind of words when there's like a lot of consonants. Anyway, it was pretty obvious that like the jaguar god was coming back, and there was some like, oh, brujos don't have as much power as they used to, like Teo Quatrice. I was like, we really have to signal this dude out. Like he probably
feels
bad.
There's this one way you can get all this power, and there's this one person who has no power.
Wow.
I liked the myth though.
Yes.
And how colorful it made like the storyline. It wasn't just your like average dude seeks power. Like it was like based in their ritual myth. So I thought that was cool, but
and it almost worked.
Crazy predictable.
Yes. Great myth. Did I expect like basically all three hero main characters to die in like the last 10 pages and also be resurrected? No.
That was a quick death, quick resurrection.
Did I expect all of the four people on the tables to come back to life? Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it was like I would have liked the ending if it was like maybe 10 pages longer and a tad less dramatic. But it like kicks it into like 100 mile per hour gear for literally no reason. And you're kind of like, oh, he's dead. He's alive. He's dead. He's alive. He's dead.
And
he's
then
alive.
They run to each other in the hospital. I'm like, gag. But yeah. I appreciated Maritza going, hey, you know, we can see both your asses right now. I was like, thank you. Some reality.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not thinking about like, oh, maybe I should put on clothes.
Right. Or like
for someone who is so conscious about their body.
Yes. And they do mention that where like he's like, he feels uncomfortable without his binder. But then, you know,
he runs through the hallways in a hospital gown.
Yeah. All his worries disappear when he sees Julian, despite the fact that he's surrounded by family who are also really concerned that he has like literally died.
Well, yeah.
And his cousin who saved his life.
Yeah. He summoned Lady Death. And Lady Death said there are consequences. I honestly thought that he would just die, and that would just be the end. I knew it wasn't going
to
be
that. When it switched to Julian's perspective, I kind of thought so too. Yeah. So like, if he wasn't going to die, I don't think we needed that random perspective switch at the end.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I don't wish that because I'm glad that they're together and it's YA and we don't want to traumatize the kids. But yes, the perspective change was jarring a bit. I didn't hate it, but also it was jarring. I liked that Tio Catrice got eaten by the jaguar. That was funny.
No, the drama would have been completely unacceptable in an adult novel because it was YA. It came across as just cheesy, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that it?
I think that's it. We've gotten to the end of the book.
Shit.
Es el último.
Fin.
You guys excited to get to try out your Spanish again?
I understood all of this book. Like, even the Spanish sections. Oh. I was like, oh, yay.
Actually, that's a point I want to make. At the end, when Julian's gone feral over Yadriel's body or whatever, which also was the 0 to 100 thing. Sorry. He's like, is he a friend of yours? And he's like, mi querido, which is basically like my dear, my love. Like, he's my love. And the dad was like, whoa.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know you.
He said mi querido. And I was like, oh, shit. Did you talk to him about this? Like,
yeah.
Y'all have barely kissed.
Right. It was cute, but it was like so dramatic. And this book like didn't go back and explain Spanish phrases it used, which some books do. So if you didn't know Spanish, you'd just be like, okay.
Yeah, you probably just would have read that and been like, oh, okay, whatever.
But it was, no, like, my love, was like, my love, my dear. Yeah.
And to his father. And he's like, what's this 16-year-old boy saying?
Yeah, they're all kind of like, okay, dude, like, we get it. Just please don't kill us.
Yeah, they're freaked out because they're his actual family. And the guy he met 3 days ago as a ghost is the one fairly defending his body.
To be fair, he was probably covered in blood because he had just had a dagger in his heart.
Absolutely. Everyone was covered in blood.
That's real creepy.
Yes.
Also, I found it strange that Miguel was the one to go fetch them. Like, because I feel like I would have been like, oh my God, Miguel, you're alive. And if he was like, quick, we have to go get all these bodies, I'd be like, what the hell? It just seemed like a lot and too easy for him to be the one to go do it. But
also, like, the guy just came back to life.
Right.
And you're like, run.
He's carrying Yandriel to the ambulance. And the whole time Yandriel is like, screw you, Miguel. I'm looking for Julian. Anyway, sorry. The end was chaotic, but I wanted to point out that one Spanish phrase.
Yeah. So do you guys have book recommendations?
I would like to provide a movie recommendation.
Okay.
Is it Scooby-Doo?
No. It's actually one of my like all-time favorite animated movies. And it's called The Book of Life.
Oh, it's a good
movie. I love The Book of Life.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Orpheus in the Underworld, but it has very similar vibes. And Santa Muerte is in it. And yeah, I think the story really reminded me of that. And that's probably why I liked it so much, because I love that movie.
Well, I'm going to recommend a book before Casey can. Aristotle,
no, it's Aristotle and Dante.
I did it first.
No, it's mine.
It's mine.
Y'all, if you want the boring version of this one, read that one.
Oh, stop.
Oh, Caitlin, stop.
Look, maybe controversial statement. If Dead Romantics and Aristotle and Dante had a baby, it's this book.
No, that's fair.
It is fair. I just hope.
And you know what? The Vanishing Half also has a trans character in it.
So
I'm trying to think of like books that like
we have not read any books for the podcast from a trans perspective.
Yes, for sure. But I was trying to think of like similar books talking
those
about
are not similar issues.
Okay, whatever. Aristotle and Dante discover the secrets of the universe.
Yeah, I second that. I do think if you want a book that's like more cheesy than this, read Dead Romantics.
Oh, yeah.
So no, just ghost romance.
Released an episode on that one, so some cheese in our spooky season so far.
We're easing
really
in.
Started off light.
Yeah, we're going from rom-com to a more complex YA kind of rom-com, and then we're gonna end with just the most unhinged horror book you're ever gonna read.
Stay tuned.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Casey.
Throw in, pepper in some serial killers and
yeah, all the good stuff, all the good spooky shit.
Spooky shit.
So there you have it. That's our discussion for today. We want you to disagree, not if you're transphobic, but if you have an actual real opinion about the book, we want you to disagree. These are our opinions. And rate and review the podcast and engage with us online. We are at Busy Girls Pod almost everywhere.
Yeah. Connect with us, throw us a rating, and join us for the rest of the spooky season. So with that, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.